All right, coming up on Nothing Major, we have a jam-packed episode. We also have an interview with Kyle Edmund that we recorded a few weeks ago to talk, of course, about the grass court swing and Wimbledon. And of course, we're going to preview Wimbledon. Let's get the show started.
Jack Jones, Stevie and Sam, got close a few times, never won a slam, Nothing Major.
All right, welcome back to Nothing Major. John Isner here on this Friday with Stevie Johnson and Sam Querrey and Charlie Fox and the team at Sift Creative. Monday's episode was jam-packed. Today's is also jam-packed. So let's get this going. We talked about on Monday, we couldn't get in touch with the time traveler, Ryan Mazzotta, to give him his $2,000 from Tennis Warehouse and also try to get him on the pod. We have gotten contact with him. I think the $2,000 lured him in for sure. Yeah. So we're gonna interview him at some point and talk about how the hell he predicted Zverev over Kaboli.
We're going to try to get him on this week for next week's episode.
Thank you, Sam. That'll be great. A nice little segue also, because Wimbledon, of course, is right around the corner. We're doing the same drill again. Something major, as everyone knows. Every other day during the course of Wimbledon, we will also have our Wimbledon bracket, just like we did last year. Same thing as Roland Garros. Fill it out. Submit your entries. Winning team gets a $2,000 gift card from Tennis Warehouse. I think as this continues to progress, we might try to up that a little bit.
I want it to be 10 grand so bad.
Yeah, maybe in increments, maybe 2,500. Not this time. Maybe US Open, we can get it to 2,500. Guys,
we're running lean.
We're running lean. So maybe we'll get that going. But yeah, that'll be up for Wimbledon. And please send suggestions as to what Stevie has to do for his Roland Garros punishment, please, because we need to make this.
And then we need a new punishment for the Wimbledon loser.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So we're going to drop that Edmund interview in just a little bit. But before we do, some news broke in the last 3 days. Some very big news. A former Wimbledon champion has been banned for 4 years for missing a drug test. That's Marketa Vondrousova. Obviously, everyone remembers her Wimbledon triumph. That was absolutely amazing. She is banned 4 years for missing a drug test. A lot of people out there don't really know how the drug, as the testing, the whereabouts system works. I'm going to try to sum it up just super quickly. You have 1 hour that you have to make yourself available at all times, 365 days a year. Typically for us, for me, it was 6 to 7 a.m. I don't know about you guys, Stevie, Sam.
Yeah, 5 to 6 a.m. for me.
Most players, I think, is between that like 5 to 8 a.m. window.
Exactly. Because you know you're home, you know you're sleeping. It's unpleasant to get woken up for a urine and blood test, but that's what it is. It's how you keep our sport clean. So be it. And they came to her house or her apartment outside of her window. We don't know what her designated window was, but according to Marketa, they came outside her window and she refused the drug test. And because of that, she has been banned 4 years.
Can I just add real quick? You are allowed to come outside the window, and if you're not home at that time,
that's what
you
I was going to start
a missed test.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. Sorry. So I was going to let Stevie explain that a little bit. The drug testers can come outside of your window, and if you're not home, which you're not, because that's not your hour, you don't get, nothing happens. You don't get penalized in any ways. So go ahead, Stevie.
So you get, let's call it a 12-month rolling period. So January 1, I mean, it could be any time, but you have to do that every single day, as John mentioned. If you miss a test, that's one strike. You miss a second test, you get three strikes in that rolling year to then you are suspended. If you miss three of those at home tests, that basically just incurs a suspension right away. We've seen players have that happen in the past, pretty recently, actually, if I'm not mistaken. So that is an
Jensen
issue.
Jensen Brooksby.
I believe it was Brooksby, right? Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like, let's
it's
say
happened
you missed
to
one
us too, by the way. We've missed the test.
We've all missed tests. Like, but let's say you missed one on January 15th. The next year, January 15th rolls around, that comes off. So it's like a rolling 12 month, just like the rankings would be. If they come outside of your window and they see you or you answer the door, or you make contact with them, like, you have to give them a sample. Like, it's black and white, it's cut and dry. So like for me, outside of those windows, like, I actually didn't answer the door basically for like to 10 to 12 years. Like, I had my wife basically answer the door and be like, I don't know where he is. Good luck finding him. Like, don't come back, which happens quite frequently. At least it did for me. So that's kind of the deal, because I've had that a couple of times where like I would answer the door. And
so you're just hiding around the corner, like hiding behind a wall.
Like I would just like be like in the living room or like somewhere. But yeah, like she'd be like, he's not here. Good luck. And like just shut the door on him. Because it's the same guy from, there's two drug testing pools. You know, there's, you know, the international pool and the American pool, whatever. But like this, to see this suspension for 4 years, that's the criminal part about this whole thing. Like, unless there's more information that hasn't come out yet or we don't know, you know, because that's insane to refuse a test. I mean, to refuse a test and then to miss 4 years. Like, that's one of the longest drug suspensions we've ever seen.
It's her whole career. She can't come back from that.
No. Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's just a career ender, you know, and it's, I don't get how it's 4 years. I really don't. I really don't.
To be clear, too, if they come outside of that window and you answer the door, you have to take the test.
Yeah.
That's where I think you went. They see you, you have to take the test. That's where it went wrong here. She was in contact with the drug tester, I believe.
Yes.
Also, when we're talking about this, we don't know all the, we're just kind of going with what we see on the internet here.
I mean, just for clarity, Jensen missed, they were suspended 18 months for just missing three tests. Right? Which is still a long time. But like you missed the three tests outside your windows. Sure. We've all been at two strikes probably at one time in our career. And it is so incredibly stressful.
It is.
18 months is a long time.
But that's not what's happening here. She just refused the test, which they then equate to a positive test. If you're with the drug tester, remember Victor Troitsky in Monte Carlo a long time ago had this happen. He said he was scared of needles, didn't do the test. He got banned. That's what they're saying here. If you refuse a test at home, within your window, outside of your window, it's the same as a positive test. And that's why she's gotten the 4 years. I think we all agree it's completely and totally ridiculous. Hopefully she can appeal this and get it overturned. It's crazy. Like she cited mental stress is what she cited. Yeah. Like, you know, they came outside her window and she had a moment, right? Like I don't want to do this. Like, get out of here, you know, and now she's banned 4 years. It's crazy.
The one thing I'm a little confused at, she was quoted saying, they rang my door late last night without properly identifying themselves. They always identify themselves.
If that's the case,
and I get being a woman at night, but I've always had them, every time they rang my doorbell, it would be like anti-doping, they would identify themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. This just doesn't feel like the punishment matches the crime here. I hope it's like an appealable suspense, which is insane because we've seen other things be suspended for less and it just doesn't make sense. Like we need to be a uniform, like across the board.
I just hopefully common sense can prevail here.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people is that the system is not, you know, it's not the same maybe across the board as what a lot of people think is. I mean, like you can get a positive test and be suspended for way less than this. I mean, this is crazy. 4 years is out of control. 6 months would be out of control in my mind. Yeah. I mean, a six-month
ban. The players supported her too, which shows you
totally,
something as well.
Totally. The players do support other players with this. The system is like, I missed two tests. We're talking about, I missed two tests in a row when I was living in Florida because the guard gate at my neighborhood didn't let them in. And so I missed two tests in a row within a week. So for 51 weeks, I was on red alert. Like sleeping with my phone on ring type of thing. Dude. Sam Querrey would call me plaster drunk at 3 a.m, you know, because my phone was all the time. Right. And so anyways, I will say,
like to end this conversation, it is the biggest stress relief. As soon as I stopped playing tennis, I don't know about you guys, to never have to worry about that again. Like I was so happy to never have to give whereabouts to tell anyone where I was. Like you could just sleep free knowing nobody's going to come to your house for a drug test.
No, it's crazy. We feel for her. Hopefully she can get this overturned or something. And common sense needs to prevail. This is out of control. 4 years?
I've never heard of something like that, quite frankly.
Unbelievable. No. Like baseball players like legitimately like get caught on video, like injecting themselves with anabolic steroids and get suspended 50 games.
Yeah.
You know?
They don't get suspended continue to get their guaranteed contract.
It's
great.
And they continue. It's crazy. We feel so bad for her, you know, especially with Wimbledon around the corner, her history there.
It's not long ago she won. It's 2023. Like she's not.
Yep.
Yeah. You know,
it's crazy. Anyways, it's big news in the tennis world there. And we hopefully that can, she can appeal, and I don't know, they come to some conclusion because this is absurd, 4 years. We could all agree on that, but Let's move on. Mentioned in the pre-intro that we did a Kyle Edmund interview, former top 10 player from the UK, a very good player on grass and hard courts. He was a fantastic interview, so I hope you guys enjoy this one. All right, joining us on the pod right now is former British number one and former world number 14 Australian Open semifinalist, Kyle Edmund. Kyle, thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. Where are you coming to us from?
Yeah, great to be with you guys. Pleasure to be on the show. Yeah, I'm here in London. Based myself out of here for quite a few years now and spent most of my retirement in the city and a lot more time at home compared to traveling. So it's great to be on the show with you guys.
Hey, I got a question real quick.
Go ahead.
You said you've been based here for a few years. Were you not always based there? Where were you when you were playing?
Yeah, I've been based here, but I grew up north in Yorkshire. That's where I went to school. And then I moved away and I used to live in Wimbledon, literally 5 minutes from the club, and now I'm about 20, 30 minutes down the road, depending on the London traffic.
Gotcha. Yorkshire is the most British thing I've ever heard. So.
It's so yeah, British. Wait, so you said you used to live 5 minutes from the All England Club?
Yeah, exactly. So
like a 5 minute walk?
No, drive. But the road, and obviously the National Tennis Center we have in Roehampton, tennis is just based southwest, Queens, Wimbledon, Roehampton. It's all around here. So that's where you'll find most of the players in southwest London now.
Okay. All right, good stuff. Well, I think most everyone, especially the players on tour, the colleagues of yours, knew about your game, especially on the forehand side. Your forehand was such a weapon, like a huge weapon. One of the biggest in the game at your peak, for sure. How would you describe yourself as a player in one sentence?
Yeah, it was my game was very physical in terms of the game style I wanted to implement on court. I really tried to dominate opponents if I could. That worked in my favor and sometimes not in my favor. But it was based around my forehand. I grew up a lot on the clay during my junior years, and I just found naturally you transition over to the hard a lot more being on the tour. So that was basically everything, trying to get my forehand, using my backhand to get on there. That's how I knew I could hurt my opponents. And then as you go up the rankings or play better players, you sort of realize that you need to fine tune the other areas of your game. For me, movement was a big one. The better I moved, the better I felt on court with all my shots. And I developed my back end as I went along. That got more and more solid, more and more accurate. I always tried to work on my serve a lot. I actually felt like, looking back on my career, the sort of height I had and power, that I could have done a bit better with my serve, made it a bit more of a weapon. But I always felt the better I moved, the more confidence I had on my forehand, the more I could rely on my movement more rather than trying to get everything out of my forehand and go for less margin, etc. So yeah, it was a big shot, but I knew growing up that anyone at the top of their game always has like a bit of an X factor, whether it be like their movement, their serve, forehand, backhand, mental, like you just have like a bit of an edge. And I knew that to have that edge, it was going to come from my forehand side.
Wait, I want to go back to 2018 when you had the run to the semifinals of the Australian Open.
Yeah.
You played Marin Cilic in the semis, which to not play Nadal, Federer, Djokovic in a semi. I also played Cilic in the semi. Isner played Kevin Anderson in a semi. Going into that match, did you feel like, all right, like I can win this match and maybe win the tournament? We always ask that question. Did you ever feel like you could actually win the Australian Open at some point during 2018?
I never had that thought in my head that I was thinking about winning it, because I was like, oh, that's dangerous what you're doing. This is the first time you're in the semis. It's almost like I've won five matches, though to win two more is like even further down the line because of how big it is. I was feeling really good that tournament, and I know what, like, because I was being coached by Fide Rosengren at the time, And I said to him after I beat Grigor in the quarters, which was a crazy thing to say, but I said I would prefer to play Rafa in the semis than Cilic, because I played Cilic before and I just really struggled on his serve. I struggled to get a read on his serve. I found his whole thing awkward, his whole twitching, getting the rhythm. I was like, when the ball is in court and we're having rallies, which was where I was at feeling my best, I was moving well, seeing the ball big, just cracking my forehand. And I knew with Rafa, at least I can get into the rally straight away, because you kind of know where he's serving. The serve isn't, he's not getting as many cheap points, but there's obviously no guarantee with anything. I just knew that I was going to be in a lot more rallies. And with Cilic, I found that a lot harder with everything. So yeah, he obviously ended up getting me. But the run was, you know, great. You build momentum, you're building confidence. You're just living in the moment, aren't you? You're just going with the flow and the matches are coming around quickly. So that was, you know, it was probably the best I played in my career and certainly moved. I just felt really physically good after the off season that year.
Speaking of Cilic, like before we get on to like the next section, is his serve really good or is his cadence just really hard? Because I had the same problem. I had no idea where he was serving, but I think I was just annoyed with his like ball bouncing and the movement. Like is it his serve or is it like everything that goes into it?
Yeah, it's probably a combination. I would say his serve is world class. Like it is a proper serve. He's hitting his targets. He's got the same ball toss. He's going wide, tee. He has that. He's sort of standing side on, so you're not getting a read of what's going on. And but the twit. He's. I mean, I think he's a really nice guy. Great guy. I've chatted him off the court. I've got respect for him. I always got on well with him. But on the court, I just the twitching and. You know, when like you're in the position,
the ball like 15 times.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
You're in the position waiting. I would purposely just stand up, almost like, and as the last minute, then try and go down. But even that is just throwing you off because it's not what you normally do. And and then you do all that, and then you see the ball go by you. So it's like, what's going on today? But he's. He's reached won a slam and reached three of the other. He's reached three finals in slams. So it's, he's just a great player. And for whatever reason, it's probably the only day in my career that I would have said I would have liked to play Rafa. So
not many guys have said that.
No. So it's a bit foolish, I know, looking back. But yeah.
Let's talk grass tennis right now. Obviously, the Brits love their grass. It's probably the most iconic part of our schedule. Movement on grass, was that something that always came like somewhat natural to you, or you kind of developed that after many years of practicing on the green stuff over there?
No, I'd love to know if anyone that found it natural moving on grass, because I certainly didn't. I had to work on it a lot, and just it just felt so unnatural. Every time I was going out to the corner, I was literally focusing on trying to not fall over most of the time, trying to push off, not slip, especially at the start of the season when it was very green. And I got more and more used to it over the years. I actually had some of my best wins on grass, funnily enough, even though it probably wasn't a surface that I would associate being strong with me. But the more and more I played on it, I got used to it. But it's fascinating that the way grass court tennis is played now with the bounce and the balls, if it wasn't like that, probably most of the tour now wouldn't be able to play on it, but there's no chance the way I'd like to play and try, even on the grass, trying to get around and hit my forehand, that you could play on it now. But the fact that it bounces way more than it did, and the conditions are a lot slower now, I think certainly helps. We only get on it 5 weeks of the year. I know, like, we obviously have the ability to get on it way more, but we just don't. I mean, this is the first year that I'm not playing that I'll actually probably play more on grass than I did when I was professional, just from being a casual player now. But the grass court season is so short, but it feels like the most iconic in obviously many ways.
When you say you play on the grass, what club do you play at? As I'm a member of the Queen's Club, as you know. Do you play at Queen's Club?
I don't play at Queen's Club. I know some of the guys there and the head pro of Lee Childs, but I'm lucky enough, I've been a member now at Wimbledon for 10 years. So I was allowed to go and practice there, which is, you feel like you get a little bit of a head start and a few nicer quirks in that sense.
Have you been back to, like, in the last couple of weeks, have you gone over to hit with some of the members?
I was there last night playing, but indoors because we had a shower in the afternoon. But they've just opened up the grass courts now. And then on this Saturday, we actually have the official, what we call, opening of the grass. So it's like all the members can go. We have a little doubles tournament, some afternoon tea, cocktail party afterwards. Oh, so
that's great.
It's sort of really...
You don't actually
really
like the tea,
That's my question. All right. Thank you, Sam. No, go ahead, ask it, because I was going to ask
it. Do you like the tea? Are you sitting there sipping it and be like, this tastes wonderful?
Or is it just routine?
It's like, tradition. you know you're getting a bit older and more mature when you actually sit down and have a pot of tea, which I don't drink coffee. I hate coffee. Yeah, so the only time I sort of have a bit of a social is literally when... This is very British, but we're going to have a pot of tea and a toasted crumpet. And
a lot of people say my club over at Queens, the grass is even a little better than Wimbledon.
It's not even close, dude.
I just want to say my club.
That it's interesting that, though, isn't it? Like the difference. So I always found the grass at Queens to be a lot thicker, like a lot fuller. As in, it was felt like carpet. As in, at Wimbledon, it didn't feel as thick, so you could get your dimples and grip the court a bit more. But I found at Queens, I found it really hard to move on because, like, it was so smooth,
so slippery. Just ask Juan Martín del Potro. He like ruined his knee on that court. Great tournament,
unbelievable tournament.
Great tournament, but it's very slippery, especially at the beginning. They need to let the players. Are the players allowed to practice?
It's better now because they have the women's tournament before.
Oh, so it should be better now. Right, Stevie.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was the little domestic here in the UK with the women playing first before the guys. But I actually feel the grass is at its best when you start to get that bit of yellow, the green start to come off. You can grip a bit more, have a bit more confidence. And I think that's where the guys start the second week, actually get that play on those courts when it's just bedded in more. Even though it's great going on grass, you don't kind of want to be first on day one, do you? Because it's like you're literally getting the
I did it of, once.
And you're coming off the clay. So some years at Queens, you just see guys sliding into shots, which is crazy.
We've kind of talked about it, you know, the three of us, like, a lot. You know, we feel as if there should be a Masters 1000 event on the grass. How do you guys feel about that as being, you know, over there? Obviously, you guys own grass over there in England. So it's like, you know, do you guys feel that Queen's Club should be a Masters 1000 event? Or if not, you know, why?
Yeah. No, you're certainly not the only person or you guys to think about it, because I've thought about it and spoke to the LTA about it and... I don't know if you saw or not, I just started an MBA with the ATP as well, and Pablo Andujar is doing it as well, and obviously he's with the ATP, so I talked to him about it as well, not officially, just kind of like sounding it out. But I would love to see a grass court Masters, and selfishly I'd like to see it in the UK, especially with Wimbledon in the UK as well. And feels like grass court tennis is, you know, is in the UK. So I would definitely love to see that happen. It just, when you talk to certain people about it, it feels like there's a lot of hurdles in the way to get through it. And now there's an addition of Saudi with the Masters. They're not going to probably add another Masters. So a tournament's going to have to drop off, or the license is going to have to change. to go over. So that, how does that work? And having a Masters at Queen's, I think, would be amazing. I don't know logistically how. I think there's some concerns about having a women's and a men's Masters at Queen's, because Queen's can't expand. It obviously just can't go anywhere with the location building. So yeah,
I can try to talk to membership and see what I can do internally as a member.
You should absolutely have a word as an honorary member. Yeah. Sort of pushing your weight around.
You know, for you talked about being a member at Wimbledon now for like 10 years. You know, from being a member to now, you know, going to play the event, does it feel any different going to play Wimbledon? You know, obviously you got the crowd and the fans and some buzz, but how does it feel for you to like walk on the grounds knowing that you can kind of get there, you know, any other time of the year?
Yeah, it is a cool feeling walking into the grounds all the time. Even whereas when the tournament's not on, you can drive in the grounds and basically park right next to center court, almost where the courts 4, 5, 6, 7 are on that front row.
Wait, really?
Yeah, it is really strange when the tournament's on to picture it. It feels like two different places because it's a big site throughout the year and it feels quite quiet. Obviously, there's no crowds, just the members and ground staff and all that. But obviously, throughout the tournament, it's absolutely heaving. So it's a completely different feeling. And every now and again, even when maybe you chat to the members down there, you get caught up in normality, as in you forget where you are because you sort of see it most weeks. And then you actually have to tell yourself, this is one of the most historic places for tennis in the world, and the history and the standards and quality that they have. And I didn't fully, like really fully appreciate it when you're playing, because you're kind of caught up in the tour and trying to win matches. But when I finish, you really realize and appreciate the membership and the quirks and just the privilege it is. Like throughout, when you become a member, you can go on center court and watch matches, every match, as many, as little as you want. You have a seat there. And you've got that for life. And that's, you know, that is.
Do you pay for the seat, or does it come with the membership?
It comes with the membership. So it's just all included. And the membership is extremely minimal. So
heard that.
Yeah. So it's more of like the privilege and the honor of being there, which is amazing. So, yeah.
It's a very select membership over at Queen's Club as well.
Very select.
It is, though. So a lot of there's some people that say it's more exclusive.
Yeah.
There's one person that says that, and he's sitting there in a green sweater.
But this is the thing, like, people say the easiest way to become membership is to win the tournament.
Yeah, you're not getting in otherwise. The wait list is probably 50 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard Pippa Middleton's a member at Queen's. Do you know?
I'm not a member, so like you'd know more than me.
He would not, I promise.
I'm going to get my login.
I'm sure there'd be a member's handbook, and you could see all the lists.
Yeah, members directory.
And contacts of everyone.
Can you imagine? Shoot her a text for a little mixed.
I was actually going to ask you guys, how do you feel as American playing Wimbledon? Like, would you always class US Open as being like, that's your event, that's the one you want to win? Or is it still like, actually, Wimbledon is the one I want to win?
We've talked about that. I'd rather win Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Wimby.
I think John Wimbledon, Stevie, US Open.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I mean, you're not picking a wrong answer. I wouldn't be upset if I won Wimbledon, you know?
Of course.
The world knows what Wimbledon is. It's Wimbledon. Yeah. I know it's tennis.
I completely agree with you. Everybody knows what Wimbledon is. Everybody.
Yeah. And it's like, Kyle, you know this, like Wimbledon center court, it's not the biggest court in the world. But as soon as you walk out onto the court, you know it's different. It's different than Arthur Ashe Stadium. Arthur Ashe Stadium, yes, it's this huge, cavernous, giant thing. But you feel the history right away when you walk on Wimbledon Center Court. There's just something so unique.
You walk by history on your way out there. That's like the coolest part, right? Like all the memorabilia, everything is there. It's incredible.
Yeah, the walk is amazing. Like literally as you come out that the change room and you're walking around the edge to the stairs, you just feel it. It's like one of those very few moments, even as a player, you're like, wow, this is an amazing honor. And like you say, it's not the biggest, but it kind of is perfect in that way. Like, it doesn't need to be bigger. The intensity of it all, when the crowd is loud, that you can feel it. And yeah. I don't know what it was like, but as a Brit, when it's quiet, it's really quiet. And you can yeah. feel that when things are not going well. But yeah, it's, and you don't get to play on it, obviously, before the event. Like, it's literally the for the first time walking on, is you're going on to play a match, which is
so cool.
Yeah, it's an amazing feeling. And as members, so either side the event and more after the event, we're allowed to play on the courts, but not on center and one. We can go on two and three and everything else, but those courts are really sort of, you know, special, which is great. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think at the US Open, like walking out on a center court or to Armstrong, it's really cool. But like, as you're walking out there, you're very good chance you're going to walk past like a caterer with like a big old tray of fried chicken or something. You know, it's yeah. like, it's not.
That is true. It's a good point. Yeah,
it's not quite as iconic. It's cool in its own right, but yeah. we agree. Wimby is the best. Kyle, about, I don't know, 9 months ago or something, before last year's Wimbledon,
yeah.
We did a pet peeve segment that we had with British pet peeves, and we made fun of your guys's eggs, how they're never refrigerated, the brutal English breakfast that you guys have with the bland tomato, the baked beans, and that burnt black thing, which no one knows what it is, and the runny eggs. Do you have any American pet peeves? Anything that ticks you off for what we do over here?
Yeah, there's I love
– Or is America just perfect?
I love America, but there are a few. One of them is the aircon is crazy.
I knew it.
Aircon is crazy. The first thing you get in to the country, you probably heard it, is you get in and you feel like – you're begging to get in because the guys are like on one at the border control. You feel like a criminal playing tennis. Like, you're like, you feel like you've done so wrong even before you've got in. But I guess that's
Israel. I felt the other way going to England a few times.
Really?
Depends on who you get.
Yeah,
that's true.
Hope.
Like New York border controls, a little tough New York guy.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, I've been pulled over 3 times. To get questioned about why I'm there. And it is literally just because I'm going to play some tennis, guys. But there's feels like there's always something deep, like they're looking deeper, obviously. The heckling as well is like really sort of grinds your gears because it's, I think it's such crap heckling, but it's like, that's the not like the classic was obviously Ryder Cup this year. Like, it's just like in your grill sort of vibe. And the tennis is not as bad as the what we saw in the golf, obviously, but it's just like, that's one thing that you guys do great is you guys support your own, like Americans really support America. And in Britain, I would love for Brits at Wimbledon to support us a bit more like, in for us in our favor. Like, I feel like it's a lot more polite compared to when you go to France or America, that type of vibe. And the other thing, like if we talk about the food, is feels like it's just cheese on everything.
yeah
which
it's pretty, might have just been spending too much time in Cincinnati, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, it just feels like it's cheese. You have to like tell them no cheese, even though you even said I would like cheese on like an omelet or whatever it is, a sandwich, they just whack it on. So
okay, all right. I want to go back to the aircon thing.
Yeah.
How do you sleep during a London summer? If it's, say it's a hot night in London in the summer, which it can be, and you're on the third floor of your flat, how do you sleep? The sun's coming up at 4 a.m. It's hot, you have no air conditioning. How do you sleep is what I'm wondering. Do you have blackout shades? You have to.
Well, you say prayer first of all, because nowhere has aircon, which is crazy. But yeah, for me, blackout blinds is like essential. When I traveled anywhere, I couldn't have any lights on, like TV light, fire exit light, like whatever that is, it all had to be backed out. Yeah. But in the UK, it's tough. Luckily, when I'm here, I'm sleeping in my own house. So I'm not having to go Airbnb or hotel. But
do you have air conditioning?
No, I've got a fan.
And you're just like fine with that in the summer? I'm like, not, I don't get it.
I'm not. No, I'm not fine. But I have this debate. Well,
you can make like a crap in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, this is crazy.
I have this debate every year with me, and in my head, it's like, okay, I need to get an aircon this year, but I'm only going to use it literally 4 or 5 weeks of the year, and then that's it. You know, like the house, every house has got heating, so we're covered. So 4 or 5 weeks. So yeah,
I got air conditioning on.
I've
right
got
now.
A fan. So
my air conditioning runs 24/7, 365.
Yeah, but when I was in America, I whacked it on throughout the day, and literally as I just went to bed, I turn it off because I was so worried about the whole like getting sore throat and all that. But it had to be like really cold going to bed, and then when I'd wake up, I'd put it back on again. And that's the other thing. And like a lot of the hotels, you can't open the windows to get like fresh air. It's just aircon or nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
I would take your situation in America, though, than not have anything here. Because it's in the summer, like especially you guys coming to Wimbledon, it's just nothing. You just got to dehydrate the whole day, or the whole night.
The whole night.
Yeah.
No one's ever slept well for 2 weeks at Wimbledon.
It's impossible. I would get the aluminum foil and try to tape it up on the windows. It's brutal. Yeah. You just got to hope for a cool night, which it obviously can be in the summer there with the windows open. But then you get the big London house flies.
It can be brutal. And the worst one for that for me was Eastbourne, because the hotels there are not up to date.
They're brutal.
They're just right.
Don't sugarcoat it. Worst hotels.
Yeah, worst hotels. Yeah. Like they're from like 19 whatever, 70s.
Yeah,
not been updated.
They're like pre-war.
Yeah,
I think Stevie stayed in King George II's room in Eastbourne one time.
I stayed in like every year. I stayed in a new hotel room, and I was like, I can't be worse. Can't be worse. And I just the one year I was basically there were seagulls living in my room. It was it was incredible.
No,
it's a joke.
Yeah, no, it's true. Oh, that's so what happens. Good. Yeah, exactly.
We wish you all the best, dude. We always enjoyed competing against you on the tour, and thank you so much for your time. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, no problem.
Appreciate it.
Great to see you guys again. It's obviously, you know, playing you. I played all of you guys on court, so it's great to speak again. And I hope to see more of your clips pop up on my social media. So.
Beautiful.
Exactly.
For sure. That's I'll see you plan. In Wimbledon.
Exactly. I'll see you there. Thanks, guys.
Can you help me with a credential?
Say again.
Can you help me get an extra credential?
if you want one, I can help you. Yeah.
Oh, dude. Don't make me grind you down for a credential.
From one great club member to another one. I mean,
stop it.
Thank you, Kyle. I think that was an appropriate guest ahead of Wimbledon.
Oh, yeah.
To have like a very proper. Like British guy, like Kyle Edmund doesn't get any more British than that to talk about the All England Lawn and Tennis Club.
Yeah. Kyle's great. We've all played him. We all practiced with him. Just a total bummer with kind of how his career ended. I mean, just, you know, it's, you don't get to choose how it ends, and the injury bug bit him hard. And
it feels like he's going to stay in tennis though. He's like doing the little junior tournament director roles. I feel like every British player like ends up being the tournament director at Queens at some point.
He'll be there. He'll have a 2-year stint at Queens.
Yes, 100%. That's a lock. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, I mean, man, like injuries cut him down like in his prime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tough. He was nasty when he, like that forehand, so good. It's one of the best forehands on tour, but super tough luck with injuries. But thank you, Kyle. Again, we appreciate that. Of course, Wimbledon is just a handful of days away. What do y'all miss most about Wimbledon? I feel like this is the one tournament we get real like nostalgic about, right? Sam, for you, what is it that you miss? Give us like one or two things that you miss about Wimbledon.
One of the big things would be when your ranking was high enough to get into the seated locker room. We've talked about this before. There was two locker rooms at Wimbledon, one for the seated players and one for everybody else. I know this is a very snooty thing to say, but like There is something about like going to the seated locker room. You're already like an elitist going to Wimbledon, but then you get to be like a double elitist going into the seated locker room where they don't allow the non-seated players in. And it is so nice in there.
It's just peaceful.
Two lockers. The laundry comes back a little quicker.
Oh,
they got like the putting thing in there.
Gas and the laundry guy. It's just the best.
The unseated locker room is really nice now. They've remodeled it.
Yes.
But the seated locker room, you're just around better players. You're around Federer.
Like pre-COVID, who doesn't want to
be around Federer?
I think like pre-COVID, I can't remember what year, like the unseated locker room wasn't quite up to snuff, to say the least. Like it was a huge difference between like the top and the bottom locker rooms. But now it's much better. Like it's not quite the Delta's not quite as bad, but you still want to be downstairs.
You want to be downstairs.
You still want to be down there.
Having said that, I'm not a fan of the redone members locker room. They redid it just as they redid the upstairs. Sam, yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah, there was more space in the old one.
Oh man.
It was so tall. Like the where you could hang your shirts and stuff is like, that was right at like my ear length everywhere. So I was kind of like, I kind of felt like I was amazed the whole way there downstairs. So maybe it was just a me problem, but it felt a little more crammed downstairs.
Yeah, the old one used to be very open at all times. You could see every player. The new one is a little more segregated with
nooks
these
and crannies. Nooks and crannies.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I'm with you. They should have consulted us with the architectural team before they did that.
They should have gone with the open floor concept that we love here in America.
I mean, that's one of the best parts. And I feel like the clay is so dirty in your socks and your bag. And then like you go right to just grass. You're not getting the clay everywhere. Like something nice about that.
And you're not getting off the practice court like soaking wet in sweat usually. You know what I'm saying?
You're staying close enough. You're walking to the courts every day. I love the walk to the courts.
It's the best. Stevie, what about you outside of the locker room?
It's outside of like the tennis venue. I think all of us miss competing at Wimbledon. Like that's pretty much a no-brainer. I miss the fellowship. We all get houses. We all do dinners together. It's like a family style affair. You know, we'll come over, we'll eat dinner, like we'll barbecue. We'll walk to the village, right? And we'll have coffees in the morning on the way to the courts. It's just more of like we don't get often the time to spend like in a house on the road. We're always in a hotel. You're just meeting in the lobby, right? You're just kind of like in one place. So it was nice to kind of cruise around. You know, there was a couple of years, like it was nice. I took like the bus into the village, like all the time. Cause it was running. Like it was pretty easy. Cause we were maybe like a mile or two away. It was a long walk with the girls, but, I just missed that aspect. It was just a different way to spend a phenomenal couple weeks.
With no night matches, you know, you can basically have dinner every night with your friends. Occasionally you might leak into 9 p.m. with the match, but for the most part, you get to go to dinner every night.
A lot of takeout, or we cook. Like it was fun to just bring it home and like have like a pleasant meal.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah. We would always like, in my place, we'd always like start a new show or something. Like, you know, like, all right, we're going to commit to this show for the next 2 weeks or whatever. Could be good. Could be bad. Watch Designated Survivor 1 year. Horrendous. Yeah. Like so bad, but we had to stick with it type of thing. Yeah. Like superstition. I think I missed the first practice on the championship courts.
On the main courts.
Yeah, on the main courts. Like you get, you know, on, they started on Thursday, guys. Is that when you
No, it's changed. It's changed now. You can kind of be there all week, sort of.
Oh.
They allow when we played, I think it started Thursday.
Okay. You get only like a certain amount of time on the championship court. So you sign up for like, you have like, you get 30 minutes. Like, so I'll take my 30 minutes. I'll sign up, and Stevie, you take your 30 minutes. And then we have an hour to practice on the championship courts. You go from a rangi, the practice courts where it's not all whites, and you warm up for, let's say, 30 minutes. And then you change shirts, put on the all whites, walk to the match, the championship court, and you play points for a full hour. But that first hit on
brand new, you're right.
You're
right.
Unbelievable. I think that's one of the things I miss the most. Obviously, the competing and playing, yes, of course. But like the stuff that I think that fans don't really know about, that first practice on the championship courts, whether it be Thursday or Friday before the tournament, unbelievable.
I always enjoyed that as well. Like when the coaches or like the physios would be out there because they wouldn't want to get on the courts. If they had like the black shoes or whatever, like somebody would come out and be like, you need to take your shoes off. So like they'd be out there coaching in socks. You know, like it was... like they're very like, do not go out there.
Get off you can wear the shoes, but step off of the grass.
Correct.
Get into the bleachers there.
Correct.
With your black shoes.
Correct.
But if you want to be on the grass, put on white shoes.
Yeah, which is cool. I like that. Yeah, it's
very
great.
Cool.
Very cool. I also enjoyed the bomb sniffing dogs.
Oh, they're so cute, dude. Yeah,
little beagles.
The Cocker Spaniels, and the Spaniels.
They're so cute.
Yeah, Sam, I bet you enjoyed that as well. Sam,
I like those dogs. I like a well-trained dog.
Oh, man. All right, let's get into the actual tournament. We talked on Monday about the seeds. Stevie, you're spot on that Francis is seeded 17th, but all the seeds have come out. It's always a big deal. Like when the seeds get announced at Wimbledon, like they don't do this.
It used to be a bigger deal because they had their own formula. So guys would move around a little bit. They do not do that anymore.
Exactly. But they don't, you know, as long as you're in. So it's the usuals out there. But the one thing that sticks out to me is Novak as the seventh seed. He doesn't give a crap about that. Ideally, he would like to be out of Sinner's quarter.
Yeah. Ideally, he'd probably want to be in Felix or Ben's quarter.
Yep. You got Felix as the 3 seed at this year's Wimbledon.
It must confirm he's a good tennis player.
Yeah, of course. But, you know, Ben Shelton, how about that? The 4th seed. We all think Ben can go deep, but Novak, the old guard, just sitting there at 7. So I think he would appreciate not being in Sinner's quarter, and Sinner would appreciate the same.
Yeah. I mean, the draw is going to come out. This is Thursday morning right now. We're recording this. The draw is going to come out after we're done recording. So it's tough to break down like who we think looks good, because you're saying
of course,
it's so dependent.
It's all dependent.
Does Djokovic go to center section? Nakashima is the 28th seed. Is Nakashima in the section with like Felix and Demonauer? Because like I might take Nakashima over them in a third round.
Yeah. There's always a couple soft spots. You got like Ignacio Busse, the 31 seed. Like if you're looking to play a seed in the first round, you know, or early, you're not upset to get that one on the grass.
Yeah. But you know what? Gone are the days where I think when we first started playing, like let's call it 2012, Steve, you're just on tour.
No, yeah, yeah.
There were 100%. Always like 7 seeded players. You're like, they're terrible on grass.
Yes.
That's not the case anymore.
No, the grass is so much better.
Like and vice versa. Everyone's good on clay now too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you don't want to see Taylor Fritz first round in Roland Garros besides this year when he was injured, but.
But
bad example.
Yeah. Yeah, but there was always.
You want to see at the French?
I played Dominic Thiem 1 year at the French. He was seeded 4. He was awful.
At Wimby.
I played Dominic Thiem 1 year at Wimbledon, and he was awful on the grass.
Yeah, exactly.
He would beat me 0-0 on the clay. But you had guys like a lot of the Spanish guys.
Yeah. But not so much anymore. John's right. You're 100% right. It's
not so much anymore. There were so many guys back then, even the non-seeded players. There were 10 players. You're like, please let me play this person. Volandri was one guy, you know, like a Carlos Berlach. You know, these guys that just like, they never sniffed
Ramos
the grass.
Ramos Vinolas.
Got him 1 year.
Pretty good. He was lefty.
No.
If you're lefty, you're automatically good on grass.
I'm telling you, I played him 1 year. I was like, he's made 4th round of Wimby. I was like so shocked, but he'd won 3 matches at Wimby and he was like 3-8, 3-9. He was never won a, you know, he was lost 1st round every year except for 1 and got like a really good draw. And I was like, it's going to be fine. Got him in straights.
Sam, you beat team 6-0 in the 4th?
2019 first round.
Wow.
Sam's just a talent.
First 3 sets were close.
You were nasty on grass.
I was unseated that year. I remember when the draw came out and I was like, this is a bigger
issue
for
him than me. You were the dangerous
floater. Yeah.
Like he hates the draw more than I hate the draw.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
On the wild card front with the guys, Vavrinka and Dimitrov got a couple of wild cards. You know, they don't just exclusively give them to the British players. No issues there for me.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's Dimitrov, a lot of times because like at the US Open or the French Open, we have a lot of American guys ranked between 100 and 200.
Yeah,
they had 9, 100 to 250.
Dang it. All right, so that's an anomaly. Usually in the years past, they've had like
only
no
had
one.
Like 3.
Yeah.
So yes, this is like a different year because usually they give wild cards the guys who win the challengers because they're just looking to give guys who have had success on the grass. This year they have so many guys ranked between, you know, let's call it 110, right? Who's not getting into 250. So this was a more competitive year for sure to get a wild card for those guys.
Yep, I agree. I think that's awesome. Obviously, Stan's last Wimbledon. Dimitrov, we all know what he was doing last year against Sinner, and it's been straight downhill since then. His ranking's way outside of the top 100, but he's really, really good on grass. We know that. We saw that last year. So those are two very competitive wild cards. One
I guess, omission that some people might say is glaring is Nick Kyrgios did not get a Wimbledon wild card. Stevie, do you think?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Totally.
Yeah. Look, I mean, yeah, he's still a big name for sure, but like
big name,
he played
yeah.
Halle. No, played Stuttgart, won a match, and then like pulled out of Halle, now pulled out of Mallorca. Like
he didn't pull out, but he was limping around for two sets.
Sorry.
That's and then Australia this year, he played Adelaide, lost first round, limped around, then pulled out of Australia. You can't give him a wild card because it's 50-50. Yeah. He pulls out, and if he plays, it's a 50-50 whether he kind of tries.
His body seems to be a bit – he's just struggling with his body.
I mean, if he's playing – like if he plays all three tournaments on grass and he makes like, you know, quarter semifinals, like which he's capable of doing, like, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he got one. But hard to give him one with – not they're not trying to sell tickets at Wimbledon.
Nope, they're not.
Like, you know,
they're not trying to sell tickets at Wimbledon. It's not Mallorca. No offense to Mallorca.
Yeah.
They're not trying to. Good point, Stevie. He did get a doubles wild card with Alexander Bublik.
Like, it'll be his crowd will be full, dude. Like, for sure. Like, you know, whatever court he's on, like, it'll be full, but it's hard to give him a singles one.
Last thing here. A couple more things. At the beginning of the year, we did our predictions of all the slams. Stevie, you said Novak's going to win Wimbledon. You still like that? I think he's in a good position to.
I mean, look, you. I would like to see him not in a perfect world. I would like to see him play, you know, who Casper in the round of 16, Felix in the quarters, you know, Sasha in the semis, and then, you know, maybe somebody beats Sinner in the finals, right? So I'd like to see him on the other side. But yes, if this is the one he's going to win, it's this one. I would have liked him to play like Queens or Halle just to like get some matches in for his own sake. But again, guy with 24 slams and the most accomplished tennis player of all time. Absolutely can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, and could win whatever he wants, whenever he wants, in my opinion. So this is it. This is the one to get 25.
Keep going.
I cannot.
Whatever, whenever, whoever.
I felt like I made it. I thought I was going to fumble that one hard.
Sam and I went with Sinner. Obviously, I don't think we're changing that. But I agree. I think on Novak's, like, I don't like dislike the fact that he lost in the third round of Roland Garros. Like he got that wear and tear on his body that you need, like that stress on his body that you need.
Yeah. It's like 5 weeks ago at this point.
No, I know.
But yeah, like, but dude, like he's 39. Like I just think he's in good position to be able to manage the draw here at Wimbledon and manage his body. And he physically, he held up very well at Roland Garros.
Just think it was a missed opportunity just because Sinner had lost before him.
I know, but
I mean,
I
just
still
like
think he would have won. Yeah,
I know, but I'm just saying, like, you know,
I think it's so draw dependent. I'm still not like you could even have 24 majors if he hasn't won a ton of. I mean, Australia played great, but since then hasn't really done anything. I even think then like he can't be coming into this being like full of confidence. I truly believe that.
Even though he's won
it all these times and he's
outside of
the best player ever.
Outside of a second week here, I'm starting to lose confidence in Novak at the big tournaments. He's proven that he can do it for the last 30 years. But now there's more of a doubt because he didn't do it at the French. He's not going to, you know, potentially, we don't know what he's going to do at Wimby, but.
I disagree. The guy's like, he's always confident. Like he's not out there like, not like completely trusting his shot. I mean, he doesn't have like confidence.
I don't mean that he's
dips,
not
like,
confident. I mean, just I a little bit of, it's dropped a little bit. That's a big difference though.
I just think he can weave his, you know, manage his way through the draw and get into position where then he can just completely empty the tank, let's say from the quarters on. I think he's in a good position to do that. I liked how he looked at Roland Garros.
He's just got to get through the first week like super unscathed.
Yep, totally.
Right? Like he's just got to find a way to get through the first three rounds, you know, no stress, 2 hours, 220, get out of there. Use it as a practice week.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. All right. Well, a lot to discuss coming up. The big W is ahead. This is just such an amazing week. Sam, you're on your way there tomorrow.
Yeah. I'm excited. Get going on Monday.
Bringing the whole fam.
Whole fam and my sister and her husband and their kids.
Ooh.
There's a new host too. Reese Davis, right?
I know. Can't wait to meet him.
Wait, really?
Everyone says the best things ever about Reese Davis.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know if he's hosting the whole time. Like him and Malika Andrews is also hosting with ESPN. I don't know if they're switching off back and forth or like Reese is doing the first week, she's doing the second week, or vice versa. I'll find out.
Interesting.
I mean, between Reese and Fowler,
Just legends.
It's like the big hitters for
that's great
for and Wimby. Maybe
tennis is moving the needle for ESPN. Yeah, can you imagine like
Davis, how many suits
you bring? Maybe Kirk Herbstreit makes an appearance.
I'm gonna bring like seven suits, but then I have maybe four other like alternative nice khakis with a jacket and a tie option as well.
Very nice.
Yeah,
Stevie, did you notice that Roland Garros? Maybe you didn't. Like the second or third day, Sam probably put on the worst outfit of all time.
The black sweater with the heart on it?
No.
It's like this blue shirt with this like horrible like, what do you call it? Bomber jacket.
I was trying to go bomber jacket.
It was all flimsy.
I botched it.
It was bad. Nothing went together. And it was funny because I kind of sabotaged him. He put it on like before. He's like, how's this look? I'm like,
you're like, yeah.
It looks pretty good, dude.
I changed midday. I was so self-conscious that at 4 p.m. I went back and changed to a suit.
He changed. Like his wife texted him. Like, Sam, what the hell are you wearing?
Oh, God.
Embarrassed the family.
You embarrassed the family. Oh, that's tough.
Yeah. Do you go and tie every day?
I missed that one because I wasn't watching the 2 a.m. shift of you guys beginning days of Roland Garros. Yeah.
I'm not taking a risk at Wimby.
How are you looking forward to working with podcast rival Andy Roddick, Sam?
I'm excited to have him on the team, honestly. I mean, we have the same job, so it's not like we're going to be calling a match together, but people are excited about it. People are excited about it. As we like, he is he's a good analyst. He's a great, he's smooth with his words and his delivery. He's witty. Like, I don't think anyone's worried that he's not going to do a great job.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's going to be really good.
I feel like he's not going to wear a tie. What do you think? I feel like he's like a no tie guy.
I
feel like you have to wear a tie.
No, you don't. I don't think you have to.
I think he's going to wear a tie.
Interesting. All right, we'll see.
I'm curious to see if Roddick will be calling the finals.
No, dude. Matt.
You're going to have a three-man?
No?
It's always a three-man in all these finals. Usually Chris Fowler hosting with both McEnroes.
Mm.
I'm wondering if it's going to be like Fowler, Roddick, John McEnroe. Like, does PMAC get bumped or does PMAC
interesting.
Stay?
That's right.
I don't. They also have a whisper position at Wimbledon this year for ESPN. Someone's going to be down on the court whispering on center.
Oh, you got to really whisper.
We had this call the other day. They're like, exactly that, John. They're like, you got to really, really whisper.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah.
I don't want that. I'm a loud talker. I don't actually want that position.
Yeah, you'll be stressed down there in your bomber jacket.
Stressed
that you shouldn't
when I'm chatting and then Novak glares over because I'm talking to
him. Oh, that would be tough. There's
nothing worse.
Could you imagine?
Well, yeah, that would be real. That happened with Pam Shriver and James Blake years ago. Yeah.
Out on court at 12.
Yeah, exactly. She was talking a little loud. James took offense to it. But anyways, all right, Sam, we look forward to watching you.
All right, thank you.
For the 2 weeks. I'm going to be getting up 4 in the morning just so I can see your face.
Great. I'll send you my schedule each night the night before so you know when to wake up.
Stevie's going to be getting up at 2 in the morning to watch you.
Yeah. Lucky guy.
Probably not. All right. Let's move on. There's still a lot to discuss at Wimbledon. We're going to have a great time there. Little segment with Stevie's going to be in Hawaii. You could actually handle it, Stevie.
Yeah, I'll be up at 11 p.m. I'll just watch before I go to bed. Yeah,
don't go to bed pulling all-nighter with Sam. all right, let's move on to our friends at Tennis Warehouse. Like
nothing.
Months ago, we did a what were you saying, Stevie?
No, I was just so excited that we're going to get to the part where Sam finally got his tennis shoes.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
He's been barking up that tree for months.
Months ago, we did a racket demo piece for Tennis Warehouse. Well, our friends over there have now sent us some Nike shoes to review. We were very excited about that. There they are. We are reviewing, comparing and contrasting the Nike Vapor Pro 3 versus the Nike Vapor 12. I was a Nike guy. Like, in college, as you were, Stevie, in college. And I was a Nike guy my first 4 years on tour, but I wore their shoes for 8 years. I think we can all agree that Nike's probably the gold standard in terms of footwear on the tennis court.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I'm with you, John. Like, I wore them for a bulk of my junior career, right? Like, up until college, then college. So it's it. I hadn't worn a Nike shoe until we got these, and it felt just kind of like home. You put it on, you're like, I know exactly what this feels like. You're comfortable out there. I hate to admit, I was a little slower than I remember being. In these shoes, but they were comfortable. I mean, they were awesome. Yeah. So it's great to get a new pair of shoes, and it's fun. Just like we got our new rackets, it's fun to get something new and try something new. Now that our careers are over.
This is the first time I ever put on a Nike pair of tennis shoes.
Wait, really?
Are you serious?
Oh, you were an Adidas guy.
I was an Adidas guy. Yeah.
And then I was K-Swiss for a while. They had a great shoe, but then, popped these on. I actually hit yesterday. But I liked the 12s more than the 3s.
Yeah.
And my 12s look cooler, too. These look really good, too. But the 12s were very
cool. When you first pulled them out, did you think there were water droplets on the Nike swoosh?
Yep.
Yeah. It's an interesting little design.
It's so
there.
Cool.
But Sam's also like a big, he can only play in white shoes. So does that still hold true today?
You don't like colored shoes, Sam?
I need them to be predominantly white. Otherwise, I felt slow. If I ever got like a blue shoe or a green shoe, I felt so slow.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
It's the funniest thing ever.
Feel it for the most part. I always be like, I just need like predominantly white shoes.
That's a weird one. For someone who like doesn't have many like hang-ups, like, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I really disliked colored wristbands. Like I like they didn't absorb as well. But anyways, let's move on.
Nike though too. I feel like they always, as far as the design and stuff, they rarely miss. It's always good.
I think it's a product of the swoosh. They could put the swoosh on like the ugliest thing ever, and it'll still kind of look cool. It's just iconic.
You had this like conversation a lot, like at Slams. I feel like you'd be like, oh, this guy was wearing this outfit, but it was like a Diadora shirt. You'd be like, that's the grossest thing you've ever seen. But since it was a Nike shirt, you're like, they pull it off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Like if you take a Yoma shirt, take off the Yoma, put on the swoosh, but man, Nike really killed it this
year. Are these the ones
that the pros play like was?
Yeah, yeah.
The Vapors, like all the pros play
no,
with
they had different designs. Rafa always played with and Del Potro played with the cages, right? They never changed their footwear. Rafa like had the same shoe, but Fed, I believe,
like preferred the mesh on top.
Yep. And so Fed preferred the Vapors.
Yep.
Fed always played with the Vapors.
They're pretty cool.
I was a cage guy. I played with the cage. So I never actually played with the Vapors. Like
I was a Vapor guy.
Yeah, I was a Nike cage guy only because I didn't want to change. It was what I was used to in college. I'm like, why would I just change? Like, you still make them, give them to me. Thank you.
Yeah.
But for these shoes, comparing the 3 versus the Vapor Pro 3 versus the Vapor 12, I preferred the Vapor 12 as well. I don't know. What I look for in a shoe, because I'm giant and super slow, like I don't really look for like a shoe that feels, I just like, it feels secure on my foot. Like I put it on, I tie them. My foot is nice and snug in there. It's hard to explain. It just felt immediately good. I'm not worried about like, of course, like flying around the court, especially now at 41 years old. So just the security of that shoe, it felt like my ankle could never have, you know, like kind of roll or anything like that. I don't know. It just, one of those things, like you hitting a ball with a racket that you just kind of immediately know. That was the thing for me, especially with the 12s.
I basically felt the same when I put both of them on new. Also, thanks for Tennis Warehouse for sending me tennis shoes. As you know, I was not going to buy tennis shoes. I didn't have shoes for the last like 6 months. I was pumped when they came. Mine was the 12-2. Like I put them both on new. You know, sometimes the new shoes, you can be like, it's a little stiff. These weren't that bad, and the 12 just felt a little more buttery when you kind of slipped your foot in there.
It is. Sometimes shoes back, it felt like you had like, you needed 2 practices to wear them in. Not like you could wear them brand new.
These ones I felt like you wore new. Yeah.
Yeah. Sam did not have shoes because when he played his YouTube match with Crusoe and got his ass kicked, he was wearing pickleball shoes.
I was.
Which I don't know what the difference is, but
there's a difference somehow. But like the pickleball shoe had like no support. It's awful. Wasn't a Vapor.
No.
We the shoes are awesome. And now we each have 2 pairs of shoes that for as little as we play now can last us a long time.
We got to rate these with the stars.
Yeah, let's rate them. It's time to rate them. So, Sam, why don't you rate the shoes? Give us your final rankings, your total stars for each shoe. Let's start with the Vapor Pro 3, which I think you did not prefer over the 12.
I'm going to give the Nike Vapor Pro 3 like a like a 4-1, 4-2. I still liked it a lot. And I think it looked great. I like the shoe looked good. And it was pretty comfortable all in all, day one. The Nike Vapor 12, that's pretty close to a 5-star. Like John said, Nike's kind of the gold standard when it comes to apparel. This shoe looked good, felt good. As I said earlier, I describe it. You put your foot in, it's like putting your foot in a little thing of butter early on. And the movement that I had yesterday on court, shoe felt great. So 4.2 for the 3s, 5.0 for the 12s.
That's pretty good.
Stevie?
I was always a Vapor guy, a Vapor 12, or you know, that model of shoe. I'm going to give those like a 4.1, 4.2, just for the fact that I think I need a little bit more support these days. I loved those shoes more when I was playing because they were super light. I didn't care if they lasted 1-2 matches, if I like ripped holes in them, you know, moving around the court because I felt great in them. But now I'm more of a Vapor 3 guy, felt like the last couple of times I've been hitting with these shoes, just more, a little bit more stability, a little bit more padding for my feet. Feel like a little bit less dangerous when I'm coming home and not being able to walk after actually playing tennis again. So for me, it was a little bit more padding. So I'm going to give the Vapor 3s a 4.5. And the Vapor 12 is like a 4.2.
All right.
But it felt right at home when I put it on. That is for sure on the Vapor 12.
I'm with Sam. I'll give the 3. They're really good. They're just not as good as the 12. Like, I mean, a notch below the 12s in my mind. The 12s are a 5 for me, and the 3s a little below that. I could definitely play with both of them and feel very comfortable and confident that everything would be okay with my feet. So I don't know. I just preferred the 12. They felt awesome. As you put them on, you kind of immediately knew, much like Sam said. So, Sam, I'm with you. Fan of the 12. That's our takes. 3 players, 3 kind of different takes. So, everything depends on your game and, of course, your preference. So, let us know what you would pick and grab your next pair of sneakers, of course, at tenniswarehouse.com. It's the place for all of your tennis gear.
I will say, John, after we got those rackets for the last Tennis Warehouse segment, I've been using the Head Gravity that they sent me. I really like that racket.
Wow.
It's grown on me, dude. I got it like weighted to my specs. Like, it's grown on me.
I've been using the Babolat. I'm going to see you guys like
it's crazy,
this summer.
Right?
Yeah, only because the Babolat came in it with the 5/8 grip already, which is my grip size. The other one were 4.5. Like, it's not like I can't play with it, but I got big mitts.
But it's fun to play with a new racket. I'm like excited to go out and hit with like, this gravity. Fun. It's cool. Yeah, it's nice.
I agree. It's fun.
Our Tennis Warehouse partners. We're going to get Sam a nice tour one day. Phenomenal partners.
Yeah.
A nice what?
A nice tour.
I want to tour the warehouse.
Still in.
Oh, a tour. Yeah. Tour.
Busy summer schedule, but maybe after the open, we'll have some downtime. Sam and I are planning a road trip up to SLO.
What's SLO?
Oh, this is where their
Tennis Warehouse is based. San Luis Obispo?
SLO?
San Luis Obispo.
Yeah, oh, sorry.
Slang for us Californians.
It's an acronym. Okay, gotcha.
Sorry.
All right, yeah.
My bad.
Yeah, we're going to do a live show from the warehouse. All right, that's it for us for this Thursday episode. We're going to end this with a new jingle from Sam. So fans, brace yourself. It's so bad. I can't even explain how bad it is. So just we apologize in advance. We will see you at Wimbledon. For something major, reminder to hit the notification bell on YouTube and subscribe and like and comment everything on our social feeds. We would appreciate that, and we'll see you at Wimbledon.
3 guys played, then they changed their lane. Now they're talking tennis, sunshine and pain. Big John, Stevie, Sam on the mic, laughing about the losses every Monday night. John had a serve that could part the sea. No slam trophy on the mantelpiece. Sam beat Novak, shook the whole game, but a major title never had his name. Steve brought heart every match he played, and we don't talk about the backhand, okay? Nothing major, nothing major.
That's so terrible. We can put that in the episode one time. That was horrible,
and
right,
that
guys?
Was the best one?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I might just leave the pod right now.
I don't blame you. I hated that.
That is awful. Like, awful. We're...
Still playing.
We're going to lose viewers because of that. We'll play it this one time. We
play this one time.
But
I'm in
it.
That was the worst
thing
ever.
Give us your honest assessment of how bad it is. And don't say, oh, I like it. It's catchy. No, like if it's horrible, please say it so we can actually just be confident in the fact that we are getting rid of this.
Yuck. I mean, honestly, I think my punishment for losing Roland Garros should just be listening to that for like 3 more times.
That's actually a way to like torture people.
That's cruel and unusual punishment right there to our fans.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize it was that bad. I mean, no one expects anything good. I don't have a good voice. I don't have a thing.
The Geneva Convention does not allow that.
All right. Thanks. Yeah.